Hi, this is Shamanic Works, Lauren, and welcome. I have with me today Jamie Meyer for a conversation around the idea of forgiveness. So hi, Jamie, and welcome.
Hi, Lori. Thanks for having me with you.
Before we begin the conversation, as always, we're going to open sacred space. So wherever you are, if you would sort of orient yourself so that you know maybe which direction the sun comes up in, so that you know where to begin, because we'll begin in the east, and face that direction. Or alternatively, if you don't know where the sun comes up, because you're maybe in a strange building and you're just not aware of where you are in the universe, choose a direction and let that be magical east for you for this the duration of this program. So if you'll face yourself towards the east if you can, or simply direct your attention that direction, we'll begin. Spirits of the east, you who throw open the gates of the dawn and invite us to greet the sun, you who are the midwives and nurturers of new beginnings, the protectors of the young, the nourishers of all that is new and uncertain, teach us to nurture, protect, and nourish that which is new within us. Join us in this conversation. Lean into us and make your wisdom known. Then if you will turn a quarter turn to your right, we'll be facing south. Spirits of the south, you who are the bright satisfaction of the new, coming to fruition, the richness and bodily joy of high summer, teach us to wiggle our toes in the green grass, skip and turn our faces to the sun, to love this life we have been given. Join us in this conversation. Lean into us and make your wisdom known. We'll turn another quarter turn to the right, facing west. Spirits of the west, you who open the door for the setting sun, prepare our eyes with the softening dusk to walk into the velvety dark of that which is yet unknown. Teach us to be impeccable warriors, unburdened, with no need of enemies in this life or the next. Join us in this conversation. Lean into us and make your wisdom known. Then if you will turn another quarter turn to your right, you will be facing north. Spirits of the North, ancestors, you who have the heart to make the epic journey beyond death and have the courage to stand behind us, beside us, to teach, to guide, to protect us. Teach us to be aware of your presence, the richness of your contribution to the world. Join us in this conversation. Lean into us. Make your wisdom. Then if you'll extend your hands upwards, your attention upwards. Spirits of the sky, the holy wind, cloud people, water carriers, and rain bringers. Papa Sol, our star, grandmother moon, star nations of whose stuff we are made. Shine your light on us so that we see ourselves clearly the path we are walking. Shower your teachings onto us and around us and open our minds to receive. Join us in this conversation. Lean into us and make your wisdom known. And then reach down. If you can, place your hand on the earth, possibly in her guises, floor or carpet. Earth, my mother. Earth, my mother. Earth, my mother. You cradle us as always. Teach us to walk with grace upon your skin, to dance with love upon your belly, to greet all our relatives with generosity and grace. For we are all earth. We are all bone of your bone, blood of your blood, breath of your breath. Join us in this conversation. Lean into us and make your wisdom known. So here we are, wrapped in sacred space, in the presence of our ancestors, the spirits around us, and we're going to have a conversation. So I don't know how people feel about forgiveness, but I sometimes, when I consider it, feel the burden of the should, and I also feel the sort of standard resistance from time to time. That possibly isn't the thing I want to be doing. But I also have needed forgiveness and have been granted it. And that is really wonderful. But what about yourself?
Yeah, you know, it's a big topic because there's a lot of support in our world for not forgiving. And there's a lot of sort of spiritual and new age kind of, I don't know what the word is, like kind of orders of like to be a good person, to be a spiritual person, you have to forgive. So we have both of these in our world where like we're told you have to forgive to be good. But there's also a lot of energy in our world that says it's great to stay in resentment. It's great to stay in a state of being betrayed or wounded or hurt because a lot of our world supports that energy too. So it makes real forgiveness hard on either side.
It does. I sometimes think it's hard to receive as well as to give. Very definitely. And I do think that there is a great deal of also of identity building based on not forgiving.
Yes.
So in that prayer, which is not mine, that bit in the opening sacred space I borrowed from Alberto Villoldo about being impeccable warriors and having no need of enemies in this world or any other, that there is that need sometimes to identify ourselves by who has wronged us and who hold things against
us. Yeah, it's pretty easy. I think, I mean, there's all sorts of forms that forgiveness needs to take. But I think particularly about when we're wrong, like, for example, like people who have been divorced, you know, it's so common to basically spend the rest of your life disparaging your ex, you know.
Yes.
And it's so common for people to get together and have a lot of fun disparaging their exes and things like that. And it's almost like in some of the circles I've been in, it's almost kind of like seen as what's wrong with you if you're like, I don't want to participate in that. Yeah, we had a really difficult divorce and we had a lot of betrayal and a lot of anger and stuff, but I don't want to carry that anymore. I want to let it go. And there's a lot of kind of social acceptance in constantly and maybe forevermore, dissing your ex, for example.
Yes, and I also say this with trepidation, but I also find amongst women that just dissing men is one of those things that we do, that sort of social currency, but in actual fact demonstrates that there is something there that is not forgiven.
Right, right. Oh, yeah, that's a good point. The point about, I think, forgiveness is not to skip over the fact that there's something real that has happened. I mean, skipping over anything real is just denial. So to say, oh, you know, stop dissing your ex or stop dissing man, that's not right. Well, that's not right either because real things have happened. So to me, I think forgiveness has to do with like the rest of what a spiritual path, or, you know, in my world, the shamanic path really encourages us to do all the time anyway, which is to delve into the energies, to get to know them in a deeper way, and to extract from them what is worthwhile, and then to release what is not worthwhile. And so, for example, like you're saying, I mean, there's profound truth in the energies between women and men, and the hurtful energies and the betraying energies and the, you know, oppressive energies between women and men in Western culture. To skip over that is that's not a road to forgiveness. That's just a road to continuing a cycle.
Yes, absolutely. Because those things, I mean, if you listen to fairy tales, those things that you step over, that you then allow to be covered, they will rise up and bite you in the backside.
That's right.
Many times over. You can just cover them over and they'll dig their way back out of the ground. I'm sure that's where we get, you know, the Walking Dead from, and that we're clearly really taken with zombies at this moment in time. I think that may be why, is that we have a lot of things that are covered over that maybe should be, you know, taken out and looked at.
And we live in a time period. I don't know. I often try to figure out, are we any different now, like humans? Are humans any different now than we were 500 years ago or 5,000 years ago? Or are we essentially the same? I can't answer that. But I know that in our you know, day-to-day world right now, there is so much cynicism. And sarcasm is seen as, you know, cleverness and as real humor and things like that. And cynicism is very, very accepted right now. You know, in my world, in the world of America and, you know, the world of, you know, politics and stuff, it doesn't matter what side of the divide you're on. Dissing and cynicism is completely acceptable. And in fact, in some of my circles, if you don't join in to the dissing of the other political side, then it must be because, you know, you're part of them, you know. So cynicism is a very, very present energy, and I think cynicism has a connection to what we're talking about, which is some kind of a need for understanding the deeper ramifications of the wound.
Yes, and looking to see what is valuable is difficult in the face of the degree of emotional rawness. Because if we look at that, I'm going to go back to men and women. If we look at that divide there that we feel fairly acutely in the Western world, I think maybe particularly in America right now, because there is a great deal of discussion over reproductive rights and women's rights over their own bodies, that elicits a great deal of emotional oomph. You know, there's just stuff that comes up. And so it's a challenge to then look, be present to all of that, and look to see what is at the depths of that.
Yeah.
That is valuable to me.
Yeah. And I think that we kind of talked offline here a little bit about the difficulty of when we talk about forgiveness, sometimes there's an underlying message that to forgive, to extend forgiveness, means to not hold somebody accountable for things that they've done, or to extend forgiveness in some way means that to stop seeking justice. And I don't think that's the pathway either. I think the opposite is true, that forgiveness, for forgiveness to happen, there also has to be justice somehow in the mix, because forgiveness and justice are both about returning to a balanced flow of energy, to move the imbalance back into a balance. And you can't force forgiveness to restore a balance when there still isn't justice, because justice is still a state of injustice is a state of imbalance.
I would agree with you. And the other thing that strikes me about that partnership between forgiveness and justice is that when you have not yet drawn close to forgiveness and you're therefore overwhelmed by the rawness emotionally, mm-hmm. it is very difficult to see what might be justice and what might just be vengeance.
Yeah, that there's a core of human history right there, right?
Yeah. Yes. So, yeah. So it's one of those things that is, I think, is immensely valuable, and is a very good teacher to even walk towards forgiveness, even if you don't succeed in doing it. Mm-hmm. Is a tremendous teacher because you begin, I think, to get a vision of what is as opposed to what you are feeling, which is very real, but isn't necessarily the reality of what occurred. Maybe.
Yeah. So when you first asked me to think about, you know, talking about forgiveness, you know, I've been thinking about it for a while. I think, like I said earlier, so much on the spiritual path to me is about expanding your vision beyond the current small place that you're in. And that's what practice is about. That's what study is about. You know, you find new ideas and they challenge you. And then at some point you realize, oh, wow, you know, I have a lot of bigger ideas now than I used to. And it helps me out. It helps me deal with the world. So the spiritual path to me is about expanding your vision, expanding your view, which is a way of really enlarging your energy. And so to me, I think that how we can tell the difference between justice seeking and vengeance, and how can we tell the difference between forgiveness and denial, it has to do with expanding our vision of what has happened. And in that expanding of the vision, I think I've experienced it in my life. It tells us, it guides us about what the next action can be that can help us restore a balance of energy inside ourselves and therefore in the world. So, for example, I think of course, there's so many things that need forgiveness, from, you know, I mean, huge, huge things like genocide, you know, to much smaller things, you know, like betrayal between lovers and things like that. Of course, if you've been betrayed or if you've been the betrayer, it doesn't feel very small at the moment. But I think that's a good example, like taking a divorce, for example, which I have been through. Inside the process of divorce, your whole world can shrink down very small around you, and it can be all about very, very intense conflicts that you might be having, and you're working out old stuff and you're trying to become new people and all this stuff. But of course, the process of moving through that is that you expand the view. And so if you expand the view of your former partner, if you expand the view of life, then the fight that you're in can get smaller and smaller, and it can help you understand, oh, you know what? Yeah, it feels really big, but it's really not, you know, on a global scale, it's not that big. And in some way, for me personally, that's what really helped me remove some of the really intense energy around divorce by just realizing, life is way bigger than my divorce at the moment. Even at the moment, it feels so, overwhelming and awful. So I don't know if that makes sense.
That does make sense, because that's one of the signs, I think, that there is something that requires your attention and also will probably require some releasing. Is when you find yourself, your world is smaller, and you're very, very focused on one aspect of your life, which really is not your life. It's an aspect. And yet it seems to be everything. You know, it fills your vision, often for very good reasons. So it does actually require your attention. And I think as we give attention to that, if we can do that with that shamanic innocent mind, you know, where you come to it and just look to see what's there as opposed to coming to it with a preconceived notion. And I do know, I have been through the same process myself, so I do know where I might speak. You know, then your world is allowed to relax a little bit and get bigger, and things fall into perspective, and then you may find a way to walk towards the point where you can offer forgiveness. And I wouldn't do that verbally to an ex-spouse, but I'm not talking about, you know, I'm talking about an internal act where you, you know, let it go.
And, you know, Ben, people, I don't know, there's all sorts of famous quotes about forgiveness. And the one I'm thinking of, which I can't quite remember, so I'll probably try to butcher it a little bit, is that, you know, forgiveness is, it's not about the other person. It's about your own energies, right? That quote, I can't remember who originally said it, but the idea that, you know, resentment, and resentment, you know, takes the form of vengeance and carping and cynicism and all, you know, all those things. Resentment is a poison that you drink yourself, hoping that it will kill the other person. And, you know, I've always loved that phrase. It's like, yeah, you know, resentment has nothing to do with that other person. It's all about your relationship to your own energies. And, you know, in the shamanic world, you know, we spend so much, not only shamanic world, but other spiritual paths too. We spend so much time and effort trying to see clearly what it is that's making me small. You know, is my greed making me small? Is my arrogance or my fear making me smaller than I really believe I am? Or is it making me smaller than I want to be? What energies are operating in me that are making me small? And we come here with the energies of betrayal, of woundedness, of disappointment, of anger, rage. You know, these are energies that they may have their genesis may have been very, there's a good reason to feel betrayed, a good reason to have wounds, because we are wounded, we are betrayed, things like that. But at a certain point, we have to take a look at those energies and ask, do I want to remain inside that small box of those energies? And then that's when the spiritual work can start to kick in, hopefully.
Yes, absolutely, because you do then have to ask yourself, is this something, do I want this to define me?
Yeah.
This to be who I am, or am I larger than this? Can I allow myself to step up? And not because I should, not because that would be a good thing to do, not because it would be right. You can tell how I was raised. but because that's who I am. That's who I want to be. The thing I keep coming back to in work with students and in work with myself and in work with clients is, who is it that you are? Who do you say you are? The very fact that we're made in the image of God, according to, you know, Christian and Judaic teachings, and who God said he was I am. I take that to heart, you know. So who is it that I say that I am? And this thing that I'm holding resentment for, is that it? You know,
and another image around that, you know, my teachers talk a lot about you know, the two, you know, in a kind of a simple way, the two parts of us, you know, the eternal part and the material part, you know, the spiritual part and the material part, the body and the soul, if you will, the part of us that is more eternal, the essence or the soul, that is, you know, has lived 10,000 lives, has been through this in every conceivable way so far, and we'll probably go through it in, you know, 1,000 more ways. That part of us understands the smaller part that is, you know, resentful and wounded and wants to stay that way is a passing thing. And so it's a question of How long do you want it to take to pass? Do you want to, you know, you want to spend the rest of this lifetime working with it? That's okay. Or do you want to spend the next 10 lifetimes working with it? That's okay. If you have, you know, 10,000 lifetimes, you know, that's all okay. But, or do you want to really, you know, expand beyond that, you know, in this lifetime, you know, in the next year, in the next few months, that's okay too. You know, they're all okay ways of working with it.
Yes, and I'm, you know, my preference, because I am an impatient creature, my preference is always now.
Yeah, that's right.
What has to be done, let's do it now. But that's is right. Always the way to approach it, and that, yeah. So I get tickled. My sister, the shaman, not my sister, the doctor, but my sister, the shaman, says that one of the methods she uses when she finds that. Particularly that things she has resented or people or situations, you know, whatever she has resented that she feels like are just hugely toxic and still clattering along behind her like a string of dead bodies. You know, when she realizes that there's one there, the imagery she uses for herself is that of a cauldron that is simmering away, you know, making something that might be nourishing to the earth or to, you know, the universe. And so she reaches out energetically and picks up that thing or person or situation and just slips them in over the lip of the cauldron and leaves them there, turns around and walks away and doesn't look back. And yeah. She does that as often as she needs to, because that's, you know, this is not necessarily a one-time thing. If you've got something that you feel like ripped all the skin off of your body, you know, it was that wounding, then
yeah,
one time may not really be enough.
Yeah, and I think we have to, you know, remember that forgiveness, like, you know, again, like everything else in life, is a process, like grieving. You know, and there's a lot of grief that that I think needs to be part of the forgiveness process. Grief is the hard resentment, anger, sarcasm, cynicism. You know, these are the layer. I think the easier layer to live in that's on top of the harder layers, and the harder layers are grieving. Because no one really wants to grieve, but you have to go into grieving in order to cleanse things. But underneath the grieving is divine love. You know, it can sound so easily, you know, new age, namby-pamby, but I feel like I've lived this at least a few times in my life where I'm confronted with both being betrayed and being the betrayer, and asking myself, you know, how long do I want to work with these energies? How long do I want to feel guilty, or how long do I want to feel wounded, or how long do I want to feel angry? And so, you know, there's a process. I'm a great fan of understanding that grieving has to be part of the process. So taking those two examples of being betrayed, you can stay in anger, but if you go into grief, grief is a watery form that does cleansing, kind of like what you talk about your sister putting it in the soup, you know, and letting it get cooked, or putting it in the washer and letting it get washed, you know. So grief is a watery energy that really needs to be part of forgiveness, I think. Also, as the betrayer, there's also the grief of that, you know, the grief of being smaller than I have pretended to be, or being smaller than I want to be, being more petty or being more selfish than I want to be. And it created these energies in me that created betraying on my part. So that has to be grieved. And then for me personally, through the grief process, and I think for me, only through grieving can I then somehow, through the situation, also start to see that there's some divine love in that, and that the betrayal or the betraying is actually an initiatory process. And all of this sounds great when you talk about it, and it feels like hell when you're in it. And when, you know, when new age, you know, shaman people, you know, blather at you while you're inside it, and they're like, oh, you're in an initiatory process. You're like, yeah, thanks a lot. That's, you know, absolutely not helpful. So I, you know, I'm really aware that it's easy to talk about it when you're not in the middle of it, you know. But But it's good to hear some of these words if you are in it. It's good to hear some of these words to remind you that there is more on the outside of this small place.
Yes, and that is a fundamental part of being human. This grief thing, and we use blame as a shield to keep grief away, I think. At least absolutely. I do.
Yes.
You know, I really do. And so if I find myself blaming, and I think, oh, no, grief is coming. I can't hold on to this shield forever. Here it comes.
Yeah. You know, and that's a good example, because it takes a tremendous amount of energy to hold that shield up and to keep feeding it with blame, right? So your whole life becomes about feeding the energy of holding that shield up to hold that wave of grief back. So if that's, you know, how you want to live, if you want to live every day waking up, and your first task is to like, oh, I got to hold this shield up, and I got to hold this all day long, and then you come home exhausted and you can't do anything, it's like, well, yeah, it's because you've been holding this shield up all day long. If you want to live like that, you can, but it's certainly not the best way to live.
I would agree. And if you really, you know, if you have, if someone says to you, what I'd like to do is to live as the self that I came in to be. You know how children still have the light of heaven in their eyes? You look into baby's eyes and you just think, oh, you are so in there. Oh, there's such a person. If when you hear somebody talk about that, if that awakens some longing in your heart, that longing is your guide to bring you through the shield into the grief, and to carry you through the grief into compassion, into the energy of creation, into that whoosh of love, you know, that is not just sort of sentimental ooey-gooey love, but the vitality at the center of ourselves, that love, you know, that burns in the stars, that love, if that awakens, you know, longing in you, then follow the longing, let it guide you, but know that you will walk through some dark places.
I think, like you mentioned fairy tales earlier, and one of the things that makes me so fond of fairy tales, and really I think cross-culturally, when you look at fairy tales, I can't say all of them, but a vast number of fairy tales have at the core of their arc of the plot line some kind of a betrayal, some kind of a wounding that is crucial for the hero or the heroine. They need the betrayal in order to become the empowered being that the tale brings them into. I mean, one obvious one is like this in the Jesus story. Judas betrays him, and you can say, "Oh, well, you know, it wouldn't have mattered. That betrayal shouldn't be there. Judas should have never been a disciple." Or you can say, Jesus could not have become the Christ without the betrayal. He would have stayed in the garden eating bread with his pals, you know, and he would have been invisible. He needed to be betrayed to be taken to the next level where he finished his task. And so many fairy tales, you know, that classic structure of the young brother or the young sister, and there's some task and all the older siblings try it and they can't, and the younger one is about to do it, and the older ones throw them down the well or, you know, throw them off a cliff or whatever. And they're like, oh, yeah, we're not going to let, you know, this young punk show us up in the eyes of, you know, our father, the king. And then the kid survives it and then, you know, becomes, you know, the next king or becomes empowered. You know, down in the hole, you know, he meets the troll that, you know, gives him the golden, you know, starlight or whatever. And so it's the betrayal that creates the empowered being. Without the betrayal, they wouldn't make it. They wouldn't make it happen. And, you know, again, that's easy to say when you're not in the midst of stuff. But just, you know, just remember that betrayal is the motivating force of our initiation into power.
It is. And it's one of those things that I know we struggle with, because there's so much in our culture that says you were brought here to be happy. You were brought here to have a smooth and calm existence. If you were any kind of good person, that would be happening to you. And in fact, the best people in the stories are the ones who suffer the worst betrayals.
Yeah.
Because they have the deepest initiations and they come out the most powerful. And they do often suffer betrayals repeatedly. It's not just a one time.
That's right. Yeah, the Western culture, you know, is this dualistic culture, and we say there's a good and the bad, and there's a right and a wrong, and we pathologize the other side of the pole. So, you know, joy is great, ecstasy is great, happiness is great, pleasure is great, and all the things that aren't that are bad, and they shouldn't be part of our life. And so if they are, there's something wrong with you. That's just not true. This is what I love about the Celtic tradition, which, and I think other traditions too, but the Celtic shamanic tradition absolutely affirms that that there's two forces in life that we need in order to become empowered, joy and sorrow. We need both of them. There's an ancient Celtic text called the Cauldrons of Poesy that talk about the cauldrons of the body. And the heart cauldron needs to be turned upright so it's fully functioning by the powers of sorrow and joy. It can't be turned upright only by joy. It's not enough power. Sorrow and joy have to partner together to turn the cauldron of the heart upright so that it can be filled with the love of the universe. And this is great wisdom in that tradition. And I think you find this idea in many traditions like my Mayan teacher from years ago said that praise and grief are twin powers that are paired, like sorrow and joy. You cannot experience true praise, which, you know, another word for that is ecstasy and joy. You can't experience true praise if you deny sorrow. They both feed each other, and they both hold each other back, and they both amplify each other. So there's a lot of wisdom in this idea that we need. We don't want to hear it, but, you know, we need our sorrow. We need betrayal in this life to refine us and to bring us into our power.
Yes, very much like we find that physical tribulations, which we don't have much of anymore unless you've been really ill, but physical hard work, physical trials and having to get strong, they temper our physical bodies so that we change from being soft and a bit formless into someone who can actually get things done. I think in our souls are tempered in the same way by betrayal and grief, by sorrow, loss, all of those things that we would like to avoid because they are not as sweet in the first experience of it as joy and ecstasy are. But they are indeed, in older life, you realize that they are indeed really faithful companions from whom the fruits of contentment and wisdom actually grow.
Yeah. There's a practice that I learned. I've been making trips to Peru for several years and have teachers there. And there's a idea in some of the practices there about dispelling negative energy. They call it hucha. So we dispel our hucha. We send our hucha into the earth. The hucha is described as heavy energy or discordant energy or energy that is not in alignment with our energetic signature. So it's not useful. It weighs us down, and sometimes it actually interferes with us. So we need to dispel it regularly because we acquire hucha regularly. And then we ask for the other energy, the refined energy, which is sometimes called sami, to be poured in. So we dispel the hucha and we pour in the sami. And this is really classically shamanic. You know, we dispel what is small in us, we dispel the negative energies, and we fill the gap that's left with higher energy or with love or with healing or whatever. But there's an interesting practice here that with dispelling hucha, which you can visualize, you know, you can say, oh, I'm going to stand on the earth And I'm going to ask Pachamama, I'm going to ask Earth Mother to suck this hucha off of me, or to blow it off, or to wash it off, or just extract it from me and take it down into the earth, where she will then compost it and make it into food for the plants. So you can visualize this. And that's really a very good exercise just on its own. But then there's a next level of it, and that is you can visualize the hucha, and however that might appear to you, you visualize the hucha dropping off of you or flowing off of you, into the earth. And then you can also ask, inside that hucha, there is some sami. Inside that, what we call negative energy, there is some divine energy that's there that I can extract to bring back in and put it into my heart center or my third eye or whatever. Inside all this hucha, there is some sami. So this is kind of like a next level of exercise of working with, what we would call negative energy. And I love that image, that inside the hucha, there's sami. Inside the betrayal, there is a doorway to power. Inside the wound, there is the enlarging process of divine love. So these images are very important to me, and I find a lot of power in them.
Yes, absolutely. I do like that one very much, and would, recommend that exercise to anyone.
Yeah.
Particularly if you step outside barefoot and just stand on the earth and just let her take from you everything that is not useful. That can be the definition, if it is not supporting me in being the self that I came here to be, it can go. I'll keep the learning. Thank you very much.
Yeah. I want to add on to that. I have a lot of clients and a lot of students who have said to me, they carry this guilt about what humans are doing to the planet. We're throwing the plastic in the oceans, and we're putting garbage everywhere. And I don't want to go out and then just dump more negative energy into Pachamama. And so I should somehow find another way to hold on, or I should hold on to my hucha or whatever. And I want to just emphasize this because it's a question that comes up so often. That in this Andean tradition, and I think in other traditions also, and for me personally, in my experience, it's very clear two things. First of all, Pachamama and all the spirits of nature, the healthy ancestors, the spirit guides, Pachamama, Pachatata, everyone wants you to be the most beautiful, empowered, aligned creature. That's what everything in nature wants to become. And all of the powers of nature want everything to flourish in that way. So they want you to flourish. They don't want you to carry toxic stuff. So they are happy to take it from you because this is what they want for you. This is the love of God. God loves us. The earth spirits love us, and they want us to blossom fully. So it's not a matter of giving my personal garbage to Pachamama on top of the garbage in my kitchen that I'm throwing out today. So that's one thing. There's another element, which is we tend to diminish the power of Pachamama. We do it in all sorts of ways, but she is vastly, vastly, vastly big, and our hucha is just not that much to her. So we tend to think, oh God, I'm so, this is like an overlay of Christian original sin. I'm so dirty, yes. I'm so filled with hucha. She can't possibly take all my hucha because I'm so dirty. It's like, that's just not true. It's like you have a teardrop come out of your tear and you fling it into the ocean. Is the ocean going to really worry about that? No, not at all. So she's way bigger than we think. And then third, which I think is just magnificent, and this is what one of my Peruvian teachers taught me. Pachamama needs our hucha because that is her food. She eats our hucha so that she can nourish herself, and so that she can change that hucha into nourishment for the rest of the world. It's very much like compost. Like right now in my kitchen, I have this plate of rotting fruit and vegetables, and I have to take it out to my compost today. I throw in that compost. If I ate that stuff right now, it'd make me sick and it's really gross. But I throw it on my compost, and not very much longer, All the powers of that would actually poison me right now are extracted and revamped and restructured. And, you know, next year I'll be able to spread it around in my garden and it'll feed the earth. So arhuchá is a form of feeding the earth. It's not poisoning the earth, it's feeding the earth. So I just wanted to mention that because I had so many people tell me they have a resistance to actually releasing their energies into the earth.
Yes, and the other thing that I have heard Peruvian teachers say is that energy is just energy. We consider it to be negative because of the shape it is taking just at that moment in our own psyche. Mm-hmm. But in actual fact, it's neither one. It's just energy, and mm-hmm. letting go of it is absolutely fine. And sending it someplace where it won't land on, you know, and squash someone, that's good. But yeah. But really, it is just energy, and we live in this binary mindset that says, you know, it's either good energy or bad energy, and bad energy is bad. It just is. But in actual fact, you know, it's just energy, and you can let it go, and it's safe. And like you say, all of the spirits of nature, they're all transformative. That's just who they are. It's not an extra added thing that they do that is a burden. It is who Pachamama is. She is a transformer. She is the great composter and feeder of this planet, obviously, because that's who she is. So, yeah.
That act of realize, my teachers would call this moving into a state of neutrality. So we look like we want to label this regret or this anger that I have, this, and that's my hucha. I want to release it, and I'm releasing anger into the earth. So we label it, but she doesn't. You know, she's like, oh, here's some energy. We can also apply that to what we were talking about earlier, to the wound that was brought to us, or the wounds that we've delivered in the world, or the betrayal, or the being the betrayer. If we can move in, and this isn't easy, or humans would be a lot, you know, better to deal with. But if we are able to move into a state of the same kind of neutrality in our relationships, and we say, oh yeah, okay, so that person did that, she or he did that act, and the energy that was released from that, I felt that as a wound, and I felt it as this, and felt, but it was just energy. You know, it was a decision, it was an act, it was energy, and the energy is actually neutral. But when it came into my sphere, it was inharmonious with me, and then I have labeled that, you know, as a wound. If we're able to some degree to stand in neutrality, even with our own relationships, that can also help us in forgiveness, I think.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, we also label forgiveness, you know, forgiveness good, resentment bad. Both teachers.
You know, that's right.
You're here to learn, and you can learn from resentment, and you can learn from forgiveness, and you can bounce back and forth between the two, which is what most of us do, and learn from all of it. But we are here to learn. I think that abandoning of the binary way of either this or that, and taking a different path, may be what the Celtic tradition calls the third way.
Yeah,
you know, where there is that natural falling into polar opposites. And then there is this other way that you kind of have to create for yourself just by letting go of the two given opposite things.
I think so much in our meaning, like my, like, you know, Caucasian, Western-minded world, so much of my task and my people's task is exactly what you just said, which is we've been trained for a long time in this dualistic or this binary world, we've lived that for a while, and we've seen the results in our lives and in our actions in the world, it may be very much our task to start saying, okay, let's try to explore now what is an old way of the, you know, the third way or the non-binary world, but for us it's a new way. I think our task really is to let go of that dualistic world, because it brings well, it has brought a lot of imbalance in our world.
Yes, I think definitely so. We've certainly taken it about as far as we can possibly take it. If we're monkey cells, we've shaken it, we've bashed it on the ground, we've hit ourselves in the head with it, we've done all of the things that we can do with it, and it is probably time to just set it down and, mm-hmm. you know, create a something else, which is if you're finding yourself drawn to the shamanic walk, whether as a healer or just as a person, then that may be what you're troping towards, is the setting down of the what you've been given as a sort of a context, and the creation of a way of being that maybe would work for us in this mm-hmm. century and beyond.
Yeah, I agree.
So there we are. So I can recommend grief as long as you don't make your home there.
That's right. You know, I mean, what we said earlier, it's all about what you build your identity around, you know, so you can build your identity around the resentment and then you can go, oh, I should go into grieving. And then you can build your identity around grieving. And that's, you know, that's not any more helpful than, you know, building it around resentment. So we have to move through layer after layer, I think.
Yes, I think so. And the thing I remind myself of is, we are human beings. We were born with long legs compared to a lot of other animals, which means we should keep moving. Mm. So always, always keep moving. Even when, like Jesus' disciples, you would like to build three tabernacles in this place because it's so pleasant. You know, you can guarantee that the other shoe is about to drop at that point in time.
Yeah.
Because that's the nature of life, too, is that it keeps pushing us along. You know, it keeps
pushing us. That's right. You know, that phrase out of sailing, the doldrums, you know, is when you're in the middle of the ocean and the wind stops and you can't go anywhere. You know, the wind has to keep moving to help us move. And we have to keep moving. Otherwise, we're stuck in the middle of this endless ocean going nowhere.
Yes. And that is not really in our nature.
It's not. Yeah.
So there we are. Right. That's a good landing point. We could just, you know, take this round the mulberry bush one more time. Be very happy about it. But time is running out. So we'll change gears just a little bit. Tell me what you're up to this summer and in the coming months.
Thanks for asking. I feel so blessed. I've been walking the shamanic path for 30 years and studying hard and, you know, working with my teachers. And, you know, I'd like to say to anyone listening, if you are studying the shamanic path, I highly, highly recommend you find a human teacher and stick with them for a while. You know, and not to say that there's anything wrong with, you know, taking a lot of workshops from different people, but ultimately find a human teacher and stick with them for a while, because you learn a lot that way. That's what has happened to me, you know, last few years, and I just highly recommend it. So, you know, my teachers have been very important to me. I've been really blessed to make a living off of shamanic teaching and healing, and I've been leading more trips recently. Like, actually, I'm going to be leading a trip to Scotland in about a month, which for me was this weird little idea that I'm like, hey, I'd like to do that. And I kind of put it out to my community, and suddenly, you know, to my surprise, I have this trip to Scotland, and it's going to be really, really fun. So I feel really lucky. I'm working on some online training stuff that I'm hoping to put up sometime soon. So, you know, people beyond just my, you know, physical community can work with me more and more. So, I feel really very blessed. So thanks for asking.
And if anyone who is listening wanted to get in touch with you, they would find that online training available on your website, right?
Correct. My website is Drumming the Soul Awake. And I have to be careful to make sure that I say the K in awake, because one time a few years ago, I said, my website is Drumming the Soul Awake. And she said, Drumming the Soul Away? That doesn't sound very good. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess I really need to hit those consonants. So drummingthesoulawake.com is my website. And, you know, feel free to come to it and see what's there that might be good for you.
Yes, and they can, you know, you can make appointments. So the reason I say this is that if you're listening to this and you have already done your best, you know, to forgive, to move from resentment, and you really are stuck, genuinely stuck, get help. You know, there are people who can help.
Yeah, well, that, you know, that's a really good point. We, as Westerners, we tend to think that everything is psychological, and so therefore we should be able to work it out in our mind. You know, like we should be able to read a book, you know, read some poetry, talk with people, have the therapy appointments, and we should be able to master this energy and work it out with our mind. And what I love about the shamanic world is it's like, you know, that's all great. Those are all fantastic tools. But there is an energetic element to being a human being. And sometimes energetic patterns get embedded in us that take ceremony. They take a skilled kind of ceremony to remove these. And it's not intellectual. It's not cerebral. And that's what shamanic workers work with. They work with energetic patterns that are not intellectual. So you can't think these patterns out of you, but ceremony is the way that they can be removed. And I can't even explain exactly why, but I just, it's true. So, yeah, so to that end, like, you know, like Lori is saying, if you're really, you know, feel stuck, I do healings over the phone and through Skype and things like that. And so you can contact me if you'd like. If Lori has any other recommendations for people, including herself, it's great too.
Yes, I mean, you could go onto the Society for Shamanic Practice website and look at their practitioners and see if there's anyone near you.
Sure.
If you're interested in doing that, or I treat people by Skype as well, so either one of us can get in touch with
them.
I just wanted to put that out there just in case anyone is, you know, listening to this and going, yeah, that's really great, but, you know, I've done this and done that, and I'm stuck.
Exactly, yeah.
So if you're stuck, there's a remedy. So now I'm just going to have to say thank you to Jamie. Thank you so much for making time and doing this. It's been a
pleasure. Oh, thank you. It's always a delight to talk to you.
Well, thank you. And I'm also going to say thank you to the spirits of the East and of the South and of the West and of the North, of the skies and the Earth herself. Thank you for being with us, for joining us in this conversation, and for making your wisdom known. And those of you who are listening, thank you. Thank you for joining us here. And so now I'm going to hand this back over to Nicole, who's going to take us away to another show.